Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, a product of the National Association of Survivors of Child Abuse. And my name's Annie Margis. I'm your host tonight, and my co-host is Penelope. Want to say hi, Penelope?
Hi, Annie. Good evening. Thank you.
Okay. Let me tell a little bit about NASCA. The National Association of Adults of Survivors of Child Abuse has one single purpose, to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. We do so with only two goals. One, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, CSA. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. And back to our radio show. Our special guest tonight isn't on the line yet, and so we are going to begin without that special guest, and I thought in order to do that, I would introduce a topic, and the topic I'm sorry, Penelope?
I believe that Deborah is on. I see her number here. Deborah, are you with us this evening? I see your number. Live in the studio.
The special guest with us is Sylvia tonight, and it's not Pastor Deborah. The person who's called in today is not Pastor Deborah.
Oh, this is Sylvia. Excuse me. My apologies. Okay.
No problem.
All right, thank you. My apologies. Yes, well, then you're doing the right thing. Let's discuss the topic.
Okay. Thanks, Penelope. Thank you for all your help. The topic that I thought I would open with is atrocities. And the reason that I chose that topic was I picked up the book Trauma and Recovery by Judith Herman. And in the introduction, she talks about atrocities. And childhood abuse is an atrocity. So I thought I would just read a little bit of what she has to say, and then we'll pick a topic related to that. So here she is. The ordinary response to atrocities is to banish them from consciousness. Certain violations of the social compact are too terrible to utter aloud. This is the meaning of the word unspeakable. Atrocities, however, refuse to be buried. Equally as powerful as the desire to deny atrocities is the conviction that denial does not work. Folk wisdom is filled with ghosts who refuse to rest in their grave until their stories are told. Murder will out. Remembering and telling the truth about terrible events are prerequisites, both for the restoration of the social order and for the healing of individual victims. And so that's the little beginning there, the introduction to the book Trauma and Recovery by Judith Herman. And her point is that we have to talk about it. We have to do exactly what we're doing right here on the SCAN radio show, which is talking, putting into words these atrocities, what they were, what they did to us, and how we're going to prevent them happening to any other people. And with that, I would like to open the sharing to our guest, Sylvia. Sylvia, there we go. Wait. Sylvia, would you like to comment on telling our stories in order to free ourselves from atrocities?
But that's kind of hard because, like you said, it's so buried. The atrocities are so buried that that's what people want to keep them. It hurts too much to talk about. I don't know if you want me to go into just a little glimpse of my life and some of the atrocities that I faced. And before I get, I begin with that, I want to talk about trauma because I'm understanding it a little bit better now. But the trauma that we face, I think we rank trauma. And we decide which trauma is more important than the other. But I'm learning that trauma hits the body the same way. It's just what the person perceived to be traumatic to them. In 1971, there was a major earthquake in Sylmar, California. At the time, I was 9 years old, and I was living in Los Angeles. I was born and raised in Los Angeles, California. As the earthquake started rolling, and, you know, first I thought it was somebody just shaking the bed, and I'm 9 years old, I'm a child, okay. My first remembrance and experience of an earthquake. And I had a room all to myself in the house that we were, it was five children. And my sister was just born, so she was in the bedroom with my parents. And we have 9 years apart. And my brothers, they all shared a room. So when the earthquake got full impact, I was running down the hallway to my mother crying. Well, my mother and father both, but we always lean to the mother for some reason. Because I was nurtured because we'd been in the room with her. So I was running in the room with her, crying and trying to get some, you know, because that was my first time ever experiencing an earthquake out here. And she told me, don't call on her. Call on Jesus. Now, when I tell this story, some people think it's a horrible thing because there's a lot of people that are not Christians and don't believe in Jesus. And all Christians don't believe in Jesus the same way.
Yeah.
So from that's one of my earliest childhood experiences when I went to a provider to someone as an adult to help me understand this natural disaster that's going on. I had to find Jesus, and it's okay because I do believe, I am a believer, and I've faced many traumas since then, and I've been calling on the name. But there were things that I needed to go to my parents about as a child, but I never could go to them because of my only remembrances is calling on Jesus.
All right, listen, this is Bill Murray. I'm the producer of the show, and we're a little confused because we expected Pastor Deborah, to be our participant tonight, and instead it's Sylvia. Annie, did you arrange for Sylvia to come, or did she just show up, or how did that work?
Sylvia is just a panel member who called in. She listens often, and she has called in before.
Okay, so we're not sure then what happened to Pastor Deborah. She hasn't been accounted for yet, correct?
Correct.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go off and try and call her and see if I can get her on. But in the meantime, thank you very much for spending a little time with us, Sylvia. We'd like you to continue a little bit anyway. And you also have John and you have Penelope here, Annie, so you have a good crew. And I'll go see if I can figure out what's going on with Pastor Deborah, okay?
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
And thanks, Sylvia. I'll go ahead and ask Penelope, would you like to join this conversation about remembering atrocities and being able to talk about them?
You know, I think it's always good when we open the dialogue and we talk about just the permission to actually see the events if it happens to us, especially if we haven't spoken about them publicly before, even if that includes admitting them to ourselves and bringing it out. Yes, I think it's such a courageous action to take, and I think that the more that we can even discuss this topic, and we're all different places, we all have different levels of comfort, but the more that we can talk about it, even just the struggles of being able to speak of these atrocities, I think it's always so helpful. It's such a good thing to break that silence and to know that you're not alone and know that it's okay wherever you are, whether you're comfortable speaking it aloud publicly or not. So I just really commend anybody. I think it's such an act of bravery and a gift. And I think the more that we can encourage this kind of discussion and the more that we can share these atrocities and bring them to light, hopefully we can encourage and inspire others to take those steps. So for my own experience, I had never forgotten the atrocities that have happened to me, but I couldn't admit some of them even to myself. I couldn't even say it aloud, and so I understand how difficult it can be, but I also understand and been on the other side of how freeing it can be to finally be able to speak those things that we're so afraid to speak of. So. That's really, all I have to say about it. I could go on and on for an hour and a half just without talking about, bringing up those types of memories and atrocities. But I just, I really applaud Sylvia, too, for being online, for calling in, and sharing with us. That's really great.
Yeah. We want you to do this over and over because we want you to be a participant that we get used to, Sylvia, okay? But tonight we had a planned guest, and I called her and she had forgotten. So she's calling in now and she's going to, help us out with the show. But she knows that you're here. She knows that Annie's here. She knows that Penelope's here. And those two ladies can help guide the show. And also John is here. So we got a lot of help for you now, Penelope.
I'm done.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Bill. Bill, which phone number is our guest?
I'm looking right now. I'm trying to find her. I don't know. Hold on.
Thank you.
Is that, is that you, Deborah?
That's me. I'm here.
All right, so 850-850.
Hi, I'm sorry. I miscounted my Tuesdays.
No, I've done that. Well,
that's
welcome
not bad
to
in
the
about,
show.
Yeah, yeah. How can I enter into the conversation? What was the topic
well,
that you were talking?
We began with reading the introduction to the book Trauma and Recovery by Judith Herman. And the introduction
okay.
talks about atrocities and how we have to talk about them in order to get well.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people believe that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty standard, I will say, form of treatment, especially coming from the mental health community. They really believe that that is a way to be healed, release a lot of the, we'll call it negative things, and finally get out what people had occurred to them that they could not talk about. And I'm probably had experience with that in therapy, not myself, but helping other people to talk about it. And now some people also did go, they couldn't remember, you know, a lot of the memories. They knew there were things there. And so some people would choose then to do like maybe guided imagery work or hypnosis or some other form to try to get to those deep memories that, you know, kind of just like nag at them and they can't quite put their fingers on it. And the belief is that, you know, you release a lot of negative feelings and the memories go away and it starts a healing process. So that is absolutely coming out of mental health treatment.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like your Deborah or what would you like?
I usually just go by Pastor Deborah. It's probably the easiest.
Pastor Deborah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And being,
thank you.
Having come from being a licensed mental health counselor and a nationally certified clinical mental health counselor, I saw that part of healing, treatment, and counseling and group therapy and psychiatric hospitals with that. And then as a pastor, see the another side of it. And right now, a lot of your faith-based people are trying to understand trauma. They don't have any classes in it. If they had something about the ACEs or, you know, trauma in childhood experience, it's not in their Bible schools. It's the women's ministries don't have training in it, the youth pastors, the children's pastors. They don't have training in it to even be able to recognize what it might look like in some of their kids and how to talk to them about it or how to talk to the parents about it. And so there's such a need for education in that area of, we'll call it, faith-based groups. Now, most of your people that do treatment, like your counselors, they are believers, they're faith-based oriented. They just usually don't bring a lot of that into treatment. AA does for addictions, but there's no really AA if you're a borderline personality or having depression or anxiety disorders. They give you medication for that because the philosophy is there's some chemical imbalance either from all these memories or head injuries. We got to get the neurons, the chemicals in your brain, balanced out appropriately. Something's missing or getting too much of it. Then from there, they believe that you'll be able to talk, be able to think about things clearer, be able to make better decisions if you kind of understand your anger and maybe what causes it. And so how you would get triggered and you would make a different decision. But a lot of your mental health therapists say, we got to get this brain, the biological part, balanced out appropriately. Then, you know, once that sort of kicks in, we can do some talking. And that's why mm-hmm. medicine and pills and, you know, anti-depression medication, anti-anxiety medication, sometimes sleeping pills, are all used to help do some work in the biological part of us. And they do believe that telling your story to somebody you trust, maybe writing a book, once you can get, you know, past it. Some people have never been, you know, to court, never had to face their challengers. A lot of them are dead. But they have a story to tell. And it takes a while for people to actually get to that point, you know, to be able to tell their story. And so therapy was always there to help people, whether you wanted to tell your story or not, just to be able to live your life with your, you know, you're grown up now. You have your own children and your own husband. And you wanted to sort of have a normal life, and yet you weren't. The marriage was cold, or you were getting angry. One of the best people to really study was Joyce Myers. She said her husband must have felt like she was 25 different people when they got married. And so there's a lot of things that through learning your story,
okay,
because a lot of us, we just kind of put it aside, and then we respond in life and to people, and we may not know why we do what we do. So therapy was one way to find out, why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you making the decisions you're making? Why do you get so angry? You know, and then, of course, it can lead into addictions of any kind. And then you have that on top of the trauma and those memories. So now you got a double problem, and you can't deal with the trauma till you deal with the addictions, whatever they are. And it could be food, or some people get addicted to workouts because the adrenaline is so powerful, or fun, or sports, or, you know, just watching television. And so you have that addiction problem, trying to sort of make the body feel better, find some kind of peace, be relaxed, comfortable, dull away the whatever pain that you can't quite put a hand on. And then once you deal with that, then the treatment part, you know, remembering, it's painful, but you've got a clearer mind to help you. And there'll be some therapists that, you know, will be able to listen to it also. But now some of them have been traumatized themselves. So you have to be very selective on who your therapist is. And your psychiatrist usually just wants to make sure the medicine you're taking isn't causing any more problems to you. There are a few psychiatrists that do counseling, but they're mainly looking at how the medicine they're prescribing to you is affecting you. And so it takes mm-hmm. multiple people helping to deal with this, bring healing, along with the person wanting to be healed. And now sometimes healing, it has a lot of definitions. One is you need to confront the abusers. Well, what if they're dead? What if they mm-hmm. deny everything you say? What if they're elderly parents now in a nursing home? Well, how do you confront them with what they did or the lack of not helping? And so sometimes you can't go to them and say anything. They're not even around. And, of course, if maybe your brothers and sisters, you know, they may not even know what happened. Okay? And so breaking that code of silence is important, but it to bring healing, but sometimes it does stir the pot up more, you know, and sometimes it doesn't get the results that you're hoping would happen, which would be maybe another family would not do that to children. And or it could maybe provide a path for other people to find a way to get healing. But I don't know if any of that resonates with anybody or not. So
thank
I'll
you,
open
Pastor
it up.
Deborah. It all resonates with me, that's for sure. I totally agree with everything that you have said. And I'd like to open up to our panel members. We have a few this evening, which is wonderful. John, would you like to contribute to our conversation tonight?
Yes, I'd absolutely love to. Can y'all hear me okay?
I can hear you.
Yes, great, great. Yes, you know, this topic is just, you know, one of those topics that you could hit about on every single area, you know, that NASCA really provides in life, okay? So, you know, if you really want to look into that and base some of my individual, you know, experiences due to some of this is that, you know, you're looking at different types of trauma, first of all, okay? And it depends on how those trauma-related injuries were obtained by either, you know, through physical or violence or sexual, you know. And then you have it all, okay? Well, which happens a lot and more frequently than you know, we'll ever, I guess, really know. But, you know, facing, you know, some of the obstacles, I think the biggest one that I know of that I could put a number one is fear, okay, due to, you know, having trauma-related injuries of all kind and facing those barriers of being scared to, first of all, come forward. Secondly, to, you know where to go. And thirdly, to, do you trust anybody else in your life again, you know? So now you're dealing with other traumas because you can't tell me that every single step of the way of those processes are triggers, okay? And at any given time, a certain person could be, I mean, just, you know, floored by that. And I'm talking to the verge of suicide, you know. And this is the biggest thing about all of this is that without facing those fears by yourself versus with someone that has been there and done that, so to speak. And I don't like to use that term because it doesn't sound very you know, rewarding or authentic, but it's the truth, you know, because we understand, I think everybody that's on this panel understands about what it takes for, to help other survivors get over all of these atrocities coming through life. You know, it doesn't matter about the age, okay? I have people that have opened up to me as young in the teens and all the way until in their late 70s and 80s, okay? I don't judge that way. You can't. So that's the sad part about it is that some people just wait too long, you know, and they didn't have the opportunity to find a platform to call someone and to actually pick that phone up and reach out for the first time, which I can guarantee personally that if I had anything to do with it, it would change your life. So that's my point, is that I do encourage anyone that's facing these to, you know, look in and to facing, you know, these fears with someone and not just by yourself, okay, because you are not alone. You never will be alone. But as long as NASCA's here, I can promise you that. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, John. All right. And Sylvia, would you like to join us again and comment?
Yes. Hello, everybody, and thank you for being here, Pastor Deborah. I was thinking about when you were open, when you were saying your opening statement, and you were talking, and you do have experience from the medical side and the spiritual side or religious side. I don't know if this was different, but with those two things, how when I was listening to you, it seemed like it's just like two different ways of how these atrocities or traumas are supposed to be handled. And if that's the case, what can we do to type, because both of those resources, both of those that people go for healing, how can we bring that closer together if there are two different ways, coming from the medical and coming from the spiritual side, dealing with these atrocities?
Okay. Really, there's three ways. And Bill will tell you this. I believe that we, us, a human being, are a three-part being. One, we have a physical body. That's got issues. Okay? Might have sickness, pains, inflammation, heart palpitations. Our biochemistry in our brain, it's a mess. Okay? Our memories are stored in your biological brain. Okay? Adrenaline's there. Okay? Dopamine. All of those things are supposed to be in a proper balance. And our body is supposed to, when it gets traumatized, it can do a lot of damage. The trauma can make women start their periods early, hold it off, puberty, it goes forth. So the one area that I always want to tell people is you need to have a good primary care doctor and have them check you out physically, okay? Because that is important, keeping the physical body. If you're overweight, you need to lose weight. If you're not working out, you need to work out. Maybe your diet's out of control. Maybe you throw in drugs and alcohol, and your whole system, biologically, is messed up. That's one area. The second area that always gets involved is your what they call the soul, the mental part of us, our thinking. Freud, if you study Freud, he would call that the ego part of us. Okay? It's that part that our brain, our biological brain, which is a good thing to study, excellent books out there. It's only 3 pounds. Okay? There can be scars in it. We know with Alzheimer's, there's plaques, we can have aneurysms. That has to be working in proper balance. The right amount of sugar, water, nutrients, okay? And when that's not working right, in your thinking. Now, your thinking, this is therapy, your cognitive mental abilities get started at birth, okay? Your thinking, you're looking in eyes as a child. There's forms of child development that a child needs every step of the way to learn how to walk, to learn how to trust. So therapy deals with your thinking, okay? Your cognitive decision-making. Well, what are your philosophies? What is love to a two-year-old child? What is safety? That is that normal stuff. The therapist tried to come in and sort of re-educate you in that area. The psychiatry part comes in, and they offer medication to try to straighten out the chemicals. And maybe the therapist says, well, we need to lose some weight here. We need to gain some weight. You're drinking too many sugary drinks. We need to get you sleeping right. So that's the two areas. And a helper needs knowledge of all those three. The third area is what I call the forever person. That's the spirit part of us that upon earthly death, people believe goes on to heaven, some believe it goes to paradise, it goes somewhere. And you hear about that in near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences. You hear about it from, I disassociated. I was above myself when something was happening. There's a spirit part of us. And that, too, gets to be. And so you have to be able to work with all three or have therapists or counselors, pastors who can work with each part. Because if you just work with the mind, well, a lot of times that doesn't have to be biological bond, but it's so connected. Let's say you put on a lot of weight because some people that I've worked with, they don't want to look pretty. And if they think if they put on a lot of weight, they won't be sexy and attractive. Okay? So those thinking affects what we do. Then some people, you know, they did in child abuse, okay? There's all kinds of hormones. The nerves are getting stimulated in the brain during sex. The matter, a whole body is a nerve. If you, you know, if you could touch your lips and manifest it, probably like the, if you're getting kissed or something, manifest it. It's a pleasurable. A whole body has nerves and organs. And it's a divinely sort of organ of pleasure or pain. So I've always commented that we have three parts, and every part is going to take. And you need to have people who are qualified in all three areas to help you. So each part is having somebody who's studied that. A psychologist is the medical doctor. He knows the brain, the biological body, the chemicals. You need one of those. If they can tell if your dopamine's off or your blood sugar's off or your hormones are not working right, you got too much cortisol in your system, okay? Then you need a good therapist who understands that child abuse, you might have an inner child in your thinking. Maybe you don't want to grow up. You don't want to talk about it. Maybe you've formed multiple personalities. Now, most master-level therapists get no training in that. Usually it's your PhD, your psychologist, and they usually cost more. So a lot of us have had very different ways of dealing with the trauma. When I got called out of mental health counseling to be a pastor, I assumed everybody that came to me on the phone, on the email, on the text, ran into anybody, they'd been abused. And I'm to be their mama and to anchor them in love. And what I had to know, I don't ask anybody any questions. But I need to know as a healer all about child abuse. I need to know the dirty stuff, the rotten stuff, the horrible stuff. I need to know what happened. I need to know child development. I need to know how it interferes with them. I need to know how it affects the body, how the body wants pleasure, not pain. I need to know all of the mental stuff. I had to study Freud. Now, throughout history, people have been trying to figure this out. First, they would think, well, it was bad humors, bad blood, so we got to cut you and let the bad stuff out. And then they thought, oh, well, maybe it's an evil spirit, so we got to cut a hole called trepanning on the top of your brain to let it out. Well, then that didn't solve it. Well, maybe we just need to give you some medications or put you in hot tubs or biofeedback or electric shock therapy. And then the age of reasoning came in and spirituality actually went out the window. And pastors were shoved aside in faith and, you know, prayer meetings and scriptures and whatever. And that was all put on the shelf saying you're not qualified. You didn't go to get a master's. You're not licensed. You're not a medical quality licensed person because, according to the law, anytime you have depression, that's a medical disease. And that can only be treated by a licensed therapist. So this, and any pastor who would say, try to do this ministry in his office or maybe pray with somebody or try to talk to them about something, they'd get sued by the psychologist because they didn't have the biological training, they didn't have the mental health training, and committing suicide, so the pastors backed off. And they can do marriage counseling some. And so my philosophy has always been, it's a biological problem. Even as people tell their story, they might shake and fear and sweat, okay, because they might be giving away secrets. the biological body is affected by, even telling the story. Their mind's affected. It's emotionally exhausting to tell the story. Fear will produce all kinds of chemicals in the body. Cortisol will be released from the top of the throat. So I had to study the biological body. I had to know about medical diseases and have the insurance companies look at you as a survivor. Okay? What they're trying to do. And then even if they started something where you were employed, you would get three free 50-minute counseling sessions with the therapist. And everything was supposed to be fixed in three sessions. And your employer would pay for it. There you go. Anything else that, then it falls to you. And the prices all range. If you're going to get a lot of psychiatrists, they don't take insurance. And they take credit cards and cash. It might cost $180 to have a 30-minute session with a psychiatrist. Psychologist, he might be down to $100 an hour. I was up to charging $65, maybe $70, probably $90 for 50 minutes to a therapist. And then what happens, too, a lot of people don't want their employers to know, because I was military. In the military world, you don't go to the family services. You don't go to your commander. You don't go to any of that. You go on the outside to a private therapist and you pay cash. Because if you or your family showed any kind of counseling problems, it would reflect on your promotion and all kinds of things. So a lot of secret stuff going around to get help. Then a lot of people don't recognize that a lot of the drug and alcohol problems are a result of trauma. And it's just the mind and the body's way. I'm in pain. And I want some relief. Well, here, have a beer, have a cigarette, you know, and you're changing, or food. Food's a drug, cigarettes are drugs, cocaine, everything. It does things to the biological brain, and then from there to the heart. And the world is different for a little while, and then you more. And so what you have is you hope to find a therapist who maybe is trained in at least one of the areas, or maybe you have a pastor or a minister working with you spiritually, and you would have a therapist that would do the cognitive decision-making, dealing with, you know, the memories, and you might have a primary care. Because as memories come up, people will tell you your body remembers, but it's really not your body, it's your brain. The memories are locked in neural chemicals somewhere, okay? And something triggers them in your brain, a thought, a smell, a season, somebody's perfume, cologne, a shirt color, maybe somebody that had a beard, a dark hair, maybe the fingernails, boom, the memory's there. And you see that in more post-traumatic stress. It'll come and you'll have a nightmare because it's not resolved yet. It hasn't sort of been released and let go of. And so that's how I look at it. We're a three-part being. We got three parts that all get affected, and they all need help. It's just some areas have got better trained people to help us. And maybe like get on medication for antidepression, but you know, and it's working. Well, you're not going to have see your psychiatrist. He's too busy in the hospital and other things. So you'll have a therapist, and you know, maybe they've got some knowledge. They don't know maybe about inner child work. Maybe they don't know about disassociation because not everybody studies it. They don't study healing or trauma. They just want you to, you know, tell me what happened. And they believe if you cry it out in the counseling room or something like that. And so their training, a lot of times you have to look at the classes that master's level people take in psychology. some psychologists get more deep into the issues that cause you to go to a psychiatric hospital, or they do testing. I did a lot of testing for a psychologist, and he was testing for, do you qualify for Social Security disability? He did a lot of multiple Minnesota multiple personality testing, the Beck Depression Scale, the House Tree Person Scale, the Rorschach, where you look at ink blot. Okay, and that's what your psychologists were trained to do. Some master's level counselors get that training, others don't. Some only want to work with children, but not with teens or adults. Some only want to work with adults, but not children. So they don't have any training. Some of them are divorced two or three times. They have no children. They can't even hold their... I used to have this young lady. She was doing couples therapy, and she'd been divorced twice. I'm thinking, how can you help somebody you can't even keep your own life together? And she's going to give you marriage and relationship when she's been married twice? Well, and so you got a lot of... This one guy who was a psychologist, he was putting himself out as a marriage counselor. You're having marriage problems. Okay, go to him. And I asked him, I said, sir, I'm confused. How is having marriage problems a medical illness and disease according to the law, the Medical Quality Insurance Department? There is no DSM diagnosis for a bad marriage. There isn't it. He said, oh, well, I advertised myself as that, and when I get in there, I got to find something that's a medical disease. So I try to find one of the people, maybe they're depressed. That's what I'm going to bill the insurance for. Some of it is just money-making off of people who've been abused. That's all. But they have to find a medical disorder, a disease, an illness. So they're looking for, and it has to be probably less than within the last 6 months. And they're looking for the thoughts. And then, you know, they can, as long as your insurance holds out, you're going to put on the credit card, pay cash, they'll just sit there for 50 minutes and get paid, and that's about what they do. Does that help anybody?
That helped me. Thank you. I took a lot of
I don't want to go too long,
it.
But it's three. If you can find, we'll say, three qualified people to help you in all areas. Okay. That would be a good thing.
I had a psychiatrist once who helped me with spirituality.
There
her
are
version
a lot
of spirituality.
Well, there's a lot of that too, you know, and a lot of different definitions of spirituality.
Right.
And a lot of different religions and different views of that. And so depending on yourself, where you are, we'll say with spirituality, you may be there, you may not. Some people use aromatherapy and to feel calm and peaceful. And all that is you're breathing in fragrances up your nose that go into your biological brain and make biological neural changes. So your body feels better. Okay, those two parts are working. And so what happens is that you, depending on your own individual viewpoints of spirituality, some people may not really have it, and they're comfortable with just the therapist that doesn't really talk about it. Some are able to work it out themselves if they get on some medication, you know, that helps them to think, and they're not depressed anymore. They might read a book, watch a movie, read somebody else's story, you know, go to a workshop or something, and they get healing. And they never really went to counseling. So it works all different ways. And some people just pray. Other people, you know, they find other avenues of healing. Some people, I know when they say, it was very healing when I wrote my story down, or I talked on it, you know, on a Zoom thing or at a conference. it was very empowering, and people were believing me, and some people get healing that way. And so it's all sorts of ways, and each person is different. And I'll leave it there so somebody can comment or ask questions.
Thank you, Pastor Doug. You know, I was thinking as I listened to you about the different kinds of people we need, professionals we need, and I think another group we really, really need is fellow survivors. Talking to other people who grew up with child abuse helped me more than therapy and other modalities.
Well, a lot of times your therapist, they didn't have the same experiences as you, and they don't really understand all of that. So you need that. Somebody that's, I would say, further on down the road than where you are, and they can say, I've been where you've been. And you'd say, well, how did you get where you are now? And they would tell you how they got there. And it's sort of like if you have somebody that's sort of right where you're at trying to get healed and you're at the same place, all you kind of do is can walk together, but not knowing what's ahead or what road to be on. So if you have somebody in your life that's been there, gotten healed, is in front of you sort of saying, follow me, I went this way, I did this, this worked, I tried that, that didn't work. I needed somebody to talk to just listen. And I had somebody. Then you, who's trying, you're behind a little bit in the healing, you'd go, oh. And if you had another person said, well, I tried this, and that didn't work for me, but it might work for you, go, well, that's interesting. I never thought about doing that. So you need multiple people. One of the things that we were taught in mental health counseling was that pretty much 1 in 5 people have mental health issues. Now it's 1 in 4. And that your next-door neighbor over the fence, just talking to them, you know, taking them things, meeting with them, hugging, being friendly, could provide more counseling and healing than a therapist for 50 minutes charging you $90 an hour. But we were told that. So sometimes, like, having somebody that's pretty much, like, be a way on down the road of healing, and he tells his story of how he got there. Go, that's interesting. There's people always listening. They may not ask any questions. You go, huh, that's interesting. I haven't tried that. Maybe I need to read this book. That's interesting. Maybe I need to go buy it, you know. And so some people do it very quietly. They do it on their own. They might go to church or spiritual something, read the books. Have a few friends, make journals, and they're getting healed. Some people go different routes. So having somebody to try to stay on one road when there's many roads, you know, but NASCA can be there, and I think from the website, it shows many people that are there, and they have the contact list that they can call. Now, what I have found for a lot of adults, a lot of the older ones, they have been, you know, maybe if they're pushing maybe 50 or 60 or 70 now, they really don't want healing. That's their identity now. They might be on Social Security disability. They don't want to give up the money. This is how they get their attention. And I always had the philosophy, I always ask somebody, do you want to be healed and let go? And some people are afraid to be healed because they go, well, who would I be? What would my identity be? I don't know how to be normal. What is normal? What is healed? I don't know who I would be. I don't know how I would respond to people. I've lived with fear or
confusion or depression my whole life, and you want me to give that up? I know how to deal with that. I know the rules of fear. I know how to treat that myself. I know how to deal with depression. But you want me to give all that up? And to, for some people, all those issues are their defense mechanism from really being healed, really letting people in to see the hurt. They got jobs to do, families to do. They just put on and they just do the best they can. So some people in what we used to do in psychology is somebody got hurt on the job and they go through treatment and rehab. And then it was time to go back to work, but they'd have to give up all their money. And they were getting secondary psychological rewards. And they were getting a lot of attention from people. And they didn't want to give that up to going back to being normal. So sometimes you have to, if you're a one who's helping people to be healed, I had to know that everybody that came into my sphere of influence, called me or whatever, was seeking help. I never asked them questions. I already knew what happened because God was already directing me, that's who you're going to help. I didn't have to ask them one question. I didn't have to ask them to tell me the details because I already knew. Okay? And so I could work on the healing part. And if they wanted to tell me, they could. But most of the time, they don't. So it's different for everybody, but if you can get some, you know, people from all three areas, you know, a good primary care doctor, and you check out your, you know, just basic stuff, and your sugar levels are good, and you have a psychiatrist, and he's prescribed you, say, anti-anxiety medication, and that helps you. Now you can think, and you don't get so fearful of something. And so now you can think a little more. And so you got to have a good therapist or counselor or friend or pastor or just somebody, friend, that you can sit and talk with and cry with and, you know, that kind of thing. Does that help?
Yes, thank you. As I listen to your prescription for how to heal ourselves, I'm sorry. I think that I'm doing it right. I think I'm doing it right because I see a psychiatrist and I do take medication. The medication helped calm down the fear enough mm-hmm. that I could see that there wasn't anything to fear. Mm-hmm. As long as I was in it, I couldn't see anything.
Right.
But the medication, I really tell people, it really saved my life. And,
well, what happens
and then
is,
in
the therapist, a lot of them don't study the brain, okay? They don't study adrenaline, dopamine. They don't study what happens. There are fears, cortisol, okay? And it happens so fast, you have a thought. And boom, nanoseconds, those chemistries are rolling, okay, in your brain. And so the psychiatrist's job is to help that calm down and balance out so you can think, okay? And that's what the role of it is. And if it works and they want to make sure you're not having any side effects from the medication, and at the smallest dosage that you can handle. Well, there's nothing wrong with taking medication. It works in the biological brain to help you. So you did good.
Thank you. I think I'd like to ask Sylvia if she would like to join us at this time. Sylvia, do you have any comments?
Yes, I was listening to the doctor about when you were saying about the medication and what it brings to the body. Now, you're talking about the side effects, and when it comes to some of the antidepressants, is this okay
mm-hmm.
for me to ask? I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But what it was doing, that if I was, it would naturally, it would stop me from naturally feeling the trauma. I mean, is that, I don't know if it's where to say, but I guess I've been used to trauma so much that I've been adapting. And then when I start taking the medication, I would have real bad headaches because it wouldn't let me respond how I learned to adapt.
What's happening at the biological level in your brain, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, we know our bodies will adjust to sugar levels. Our bodies will adjust to cigarette smoke, to alcohol, to certain kinds of foods. It's a brain-body thing that's going on. So when the medication comes in, I'll use what they would do with alcoholics. They would give them something called Anabuse. So if you drank, you got sick as a dog, and you had to start making some new connections. Alcohol is not good for me. But you couldn't, they couldn't at the time see that. So they would give them as part of their treatment Anabuse. And when they drank alcohol and it got in their system, oh, they got sick. So sometimes the medicine, it's working biologically. It's in your bloodstream. And your bloodstream goes to your brain. And it works on all the neurons, the blood vessels. There's all kinds of neural, chemical, electrical things. Our messages in our brain, our thoughts are chemical, electrical. Okay? You blink an eye. You can see that when you do a brain wave. Then the same time, we get very used to, like if you are an addict to something, that means you're addicted. Well, you get used to that level of whatever it is in your brain, okay? And if something comes in, like medication, and changes that, you're going to get headaches. It's like if you love sugar and the doctor says, yeah, but you got to cut out something. Your body and your brain have gotten so used to a certain level of something or thoughts or love of it. You're going to have some rough times because it's a combination of your psychological desires, okay, whatever it is, your thoughts, combined with your biological body. People live in stress, as we know, and they grind their teeth at nighttime, okay? Their stomachs stay. They have acid indigestion. They drink. They have no peace. They don't feel their soul, their mind, their thoughts. They don't have peace. They can't relax. They're always on edge. And they live like that chemically, electrically, and in their thoughts for a long, long time. It takes a lot of effort to change that. Okay? Instead of doing like what you just said, Sylvia, you've been living in a certain, we'll say, mind way of thinking, which affects your chemical, electrical, neurological, and your body, your chemistry. Any change to that? Have you ever watched a drug addict or an alcoholic when they need a fix? It's getting out of their system. They got to say they're looking for peace. An equilibrium, okay? They're looking to have balance, and their body has, you know, sort of gotten way off of whack, and they're trying to keep it balanced between thoughts, peace, the chemical, the amount of alcohol or sugar in their system. And they work very hard to keep that balance. Now, the balance is way off, but it is a balance. And there's some of us, our body and our mind will fight, and you'll get, something's changing in me. I'm getting headaches, okay? And you go, but I don't, it's like this. I don't like the memories. I don't like what happened. I want to be normal. but you don't know what normal is. And if you're an adult now, you've lived with this stuff for so long. That's your normal. It's a new normal, but it's your normal. So if anything tries to come in and say, you have to forgive and let go. I'm not going to do that. That was wrong what they did. Yes, but you have to let go. You got to get rid of that anger and that revenge. That's therapy would be telling you that. Because you can't, it'll eat you alive. It'll give you heart problems, diabetes, sugar problems. I'm not going to let go of that. They did me wrong. Yes, they did. And so therapy tries to find a way for you to let go of all that fear and anger and revenge and forgive and move on. Hey, maybe it happened to them. Maybe they should have been punished. But you can't change it. A lot of them are dead. And so what happens is we get so familiar with our conditions, and anything that changes it, any medication or you need to drink more water. I'm not going to drink more water. You got to stop smoking cigarettes. I'm not going to do that. They can't tell me what to do. Okay? So we rise up against getting healed a lot of times, even though we don't say anything. Because somebody's trying to tell us what to do now. And we're an adult, and we know how to take care of ourselves. We've been doing that all our lives. We kind of think that. We don't say it out loud. And so we kind of fight back. Like we always, you know, well, they can't take advantage of me. And so a lot of that goes on. Therapists know it, but, you know, if you can sit in a therapy session and say very little and just cry, and the therapist is going to go, mm-hmm, oh, I'm so sorry about that, and you're just crying for 50 minutes, and that's it. See you next week. See you in a couple weeks. And if you have any problems, just go to the hospital emergency room. Okay. And that's where, and that's how most therapy works. And, you know, it's very short, and sometimes it's good and works. Other times you need books and other people in your lives. You need pastors. You need spirituality. You need more books. You maybe need to watch a video or just listen to music, you know, or maybe change one little thing in your life. Maybe change it. Throw away some old clothes, buy some new ones. It's everybody will find a different way to get healed. Does that help anybody?
Yes, thank you. I just wrote down buy new clothes for myself because you know what? I should do that. And it would make me feel good. So I'm going to do that.
Sometimes, you know, getting your hair cut, getting it, going to the beauty shop, getting your, you know, toenails done. Sometimes we need to care for our physical bodies. And a lot of times, you know, we look in the mirror, we don't see ourselves as other people. Anorexias will look in the mirror and they will see their fat. And I look at them, they're skin and bones. And they don't believe you.
Yeah.
Okay? And they'll die. Okay? And so there's what you think about yourself, what you believe about yourself, who you are. Okay? How long are you going to, you know, most people have gone on with their lives. They didn't die from the child abuse. They're living. They have children and families, and they've worked and gone to school. How'd they do that? They compartmentalize. They disassociate it. They created people. They become what you'd call multiple personalities to deal with it. They stuff it. You know, they put it aside. But maybe they drink a lot, or they go out and gamble, go to bingo, or just always going out and trying to have fun and come home and, ooh, it's quiet. Oh, I can't stand that. Oh, no. Everybody's different. But if you're a good therapist or a good pastor, everybody I know that I run into that comes across my life, they got issues. I don't have to know what they are because they all do the same thing. Rejection,
abuse does the same thing to the spirit as it does to the mind. Your normal development has been arrested. You're basically a child. You need a mama to just hold you and love you. You need basic loving, gentleness, and gentle voices in your life that just say, that, where you can just cry on somebody's shoulder. And it's, no words are said, but you can't do that too often in a therapy session or with the psychiatrist. And so you have to have a lot of people in your life from many walks, from many areas, reading books, reading true stories, hearing, you know, about how people got healed. Sometimes it's just all sorts of ways. Having some good friends. Like you said, oh, it's a new year. Maybe I'm going to change my hairstyle or something. I have that. That reminds me of my childhood. I'm going to throw that away or something. Other people forgive their parents. Joyce Myers had to. God even made her go and take care of her father when they were elderly. She had to find some forgiveness somewhere. And it was very hard. Her and her husband will tell the story. It hurt him so bad how she acted. She calls it having a strong personality. He'd have to get in his car and drive away and cry. But he wanted to help her. And she had to learn from God and read books and pray and forgive. And it took years for it to happen. And she's now been able to tell her story and write it and talk about it from a spiritual side. She did get counseling from a therapist probably early on and that kind of thing. Other people, they can set it aside, but when they see abused children, it just comes back, the trauma comes back. Other people just never talk about it, and God just quietly heals them, or they just read a book and it's an aha moment, and or they watch a movie, or they listen to some music, you know, or they go to group therapy or groups or something. Everybody's trying, I think. So I'll let other people talk. It's already 8:13 already.
It sure is, and you're doing such a wonderful job. Thank you. I just have to tell you all the notes I'm writing down about what you're saying so I can review them afterwards. And I'm just so inspired, and I'm learning so much. And at this time, I'm going to invite Penelope in. Would you like to participate now, Penelope?
I love to. Thank you. So, Pastor Deborah, you said some things that I think you could almost have, you know, an entire show about, and that was taking care of your abuser when they are ill, and sometimes they're terminally ill. And to me, that is very triggering. And I've practiced forgiveness. I have. I've worked through all that. But I personally find taking care of my abuser something that I have a very difficult time with doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
very hard.
Yeah. To me, that's almost, it's such a huge sacrifice. Of course, we all have different relationships. Our relationships are, you know, marked by different events. For me, you know, my abusers have never apologized or acknowledged the truth. You know, they've never taken ownership of it.
May not ever. No, may not ever.
May not ever, right.
Yeah,
and so for me, that's very hard. So when I say sacrifice, yeah, it's very hard for me to, I can forgive, but to actually extend and nurture and care for it, I find that very difficult. So I just wanted to mention that because you brought it up about Dr. Rich Rogers. Yeah.
Okay. How I had to do that is my mother was mentally ill my whole life, and I had to stay away from her. But she stayed with my father. My father stayed with her, and the whole family was messed up. I got through it because I stayed in church, went after peace, read the Bible. She was getting Alzheimer's. She was about 74, and she was given 3 weeks to live. So I asked my dad,
What do you want to do? And we eventually brought her into my home, and she's laying there, you know, on hospice. And I had to make peace with her. I had to think of not all the bad things she had done and all the things that were so horrible, and she came into the marriage with bitterness and anger and unforgiveness from her family, and that spilled on over into the kids. And I said, but you brought me, you gave me life. I came through your body, and you set my feet on the path to God. You took me to church. Now, she didn't read the Bible to me. My father was the one that prayed with me. And that was what I chose to remember. Her biological brain was screwed up, okay? And she had bitterness and anger had taken over. Her life was destroying her biological brain, the chemicals. She was a chain smoker. She got lung cancer, then cancer of the liver. No, can't operate. 3 weeks to live. And I had to tell my dad and my family, she's going to die, and she's going to go, and I don't want you to have any guilt, things you should have said to her. You look at her there. She did the best she could. I came from her, okay? She didn't know how to have children. She didn't know how to treat them. She had her own issues. But I'm going to remember two things. She set my feet on the path to God, and she gave me life. She raised me as a child, an infant. She gave me birth. And that's all I would remember. Her body died, was buried, it's gone. But her little spirit in there was going to heaven. And I had to live my life knowing I did the best I could for her, said goodbye to her. Even her son said goodbye. Everybody said goodbye. We prayed over her. And you have to do that because the guilt, if you don't and they die and you knew you had a chance to forgive them, and you didn't, it will eat you alive. It'll eat you up in bitterness and anger. You'll carry the guilt. And you don't want that for yourself. It's another baggage you got to carry. So you whatever you have to do, strength you have to get, however you do that. If you're called, now some people aren't called to take care of their elderly parents or in-laws who abused them. Some are. Some aren't. They die. But you don't want to carry any guilt, no matter how hard it is. You wouldn't be here on planet Earth if you didn't come through them, if their egg and sperm had not come together. Now, they were a mess. They had their own issues from their life and their childhood, and it got dumped on you. But you don't blame them. They didn't know any better. They had issues. And so you don't want to carry that, you know, you don't want to carry that the rest of your life when, if you have a chance, you may not. Sometimes, you know, you only forgive them in your heart and you let them go. I turn them over to you, Lord. They're yours. If you believe in that, they're yours now. I've given them up. I've forgiven them. I've let them go. They have no more hold on me. And I like to try to tell people, they have ruled your life, dominated your life, your thinking, your feelings. They've controlled you. They, you know, your whole life. Don't let it continue. One more day, let them go. Okay? And sometimes people don't want to do that. There's a bond there. It's called a soul tie. They're afraid of letting that go and cutting it because, well, I won't have anything to, you know, she's gone. Yeah. And you just don't want to live with that extra baggage of unforgiveness and anger and rage. You know, it isn't easy. It is not easy to live. I think I was maybe 45. That some of the stuff, it's not easy to forgive them when they're on their deathbed. Okay, but I didn't want to carry anything more from that, from her. I didn't want it. I wanted to let her go. And I wanted to let me go. And so I just remembered those two things. From her, I came out of her womb. She let me live. She didn't abort me. She took care of me the best she knew how. May not have been the best, but it was the best she knew how. Because she had issues.
And then she took me to church, went and got me baptized, and she made sure we went to church. Those are the only two things that even to this day that I could use to remember good things about her. And I was free. And so sometimes you have to dig deep and you have to make an effort of it. And we had 3 weeks. Brought her into my home in my living room for her to die. Okay? I did that for my father. Did it for the family. Now, hospice was coming in, but you imagine in your living room some person that it wasn't for. Okay? And I had to make all the funeral arrangements, and I had to do all this, and you do it. And then she's gone. And you can wish her well. She didn't know what she was doing, even if she did. She couldn't help it. She had issues. And I came from a family, you don't get therapy. There ain't no talking, code of silence. There was no help for her. She needed medication, that ain't going to happen. She needed counseling, that ain't going to happen. So we caught the brunt of her, you know. And it took my brother out. It caused my dad to have issues and me and the whole family. But on her deathbed, I had to make sure that I let her go in peace. And I had to forgive her. And that's all you can do for yourself. It is hard. And if you can only think of one thing, I would say, if it's your mother, you came out of her womb. If it's your father, you came from his sperm. And they got together in some form, and out you came. And you're here now because of them. And if that's all you can think of, they didn't abort you. They gave you life. And if that's it, if that's the only thing you can remember that's good, then that's enough to forgive them. Now, you may be asked by God or family members to do it. You may not be, but you'll be free. And with freedom, then the healing can come. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. It makes a lot of sense. Go ahead.
Well, what happens is if you have a bruise, let's say, child abuse is a cut, a bruise, a brokenness. We can reset, you know, the bones. We can, but healing does not come. Even if you have a bruise, okay, in your skin, it takes a long time for the blood to get to the bruise. It turns green, it's sore, it's painful. But eventually with time and putting good things in your body, the bruise gets healed. Same way, the heart is the same way. It needs good things poured back into it, love, joy, peace, friendship, companionship, truth. Opportunities to love others, opportunities to cry, and that's how the healing comes. And if you need medication to balance out the chemicals in the brain so that can happen, trusted friends that you can talk to, books you can read, healing will come. But it does take time. And as you know, a bruise stays painful for a while. You have your knees operated on. It is not pleasant. I mean, I've never had it. But you have a lot of pain for a couple of years to get new knees. And so what happens is sometimes you got to go through pain to get healed. You got to look at what happened. You can't keep blaming the other. They should have done better, should have known better. But they didn't. And we don't know their lives. We don't know what they grew up as children. We don't know. Maybe the same thing happened to them. We don't know because we weren't there. So hopefully that'll help you a little bit. And I'll be quiet now because it's 8:25, so you can close us out, Miss Dear. Okay, Annie.
Okay.
It's all right, Cindy.
She's muted. Well, thank you, Pastor Deborah. I would just say that for me, you know, I think
I'm sorry. I was muted when I spoke. Forgive me. Thank you, Pastor Deb. This is Annie.
And okay. I'm going to invite Sylvia to contribute again. Sylvia, would you like to speak?
Yes, real quickly, I appreciate everyone that I'm here and that I did have the opportunity to listen to Pastor Deborah. I'm really grateful that I had heard you speak, because there's things that came out this conversation, and we didn't even know, but it has been a blessing to me, and it's a part of my healing. So I really appreciate that, especially when it's the part that you have to, as an adult, take care of the person that you got the abuse from. But in my place, I always try to protect my mother and cover up for her and not protect myself. So, yes, I really do appreciate this. Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Deborah.
And thank you, Sylvia. Well, we have 2 minutes and 52 seconds left in our radio show tonight. And I want to thank everyone who listened and hope that you'll tune in again tomorrow. And thank Pastor Deb especially for being our guest and expert, survivor expert tonight. And Pastor Deb, would you like to leave us with one last thought?
Sure. Healing is always available. It's there. Does it take work? Yes. Does it take a willingness to look at some issues? Yes. Does it take writing your book, you're telling your story? Can. Some people get healed and never tell their story. Does it take forgiveness of the abuser? Yes. Is it there for you in the future on a road that might have many stops and starts? Yes. Is it possible to go and say, I had been abused, but I'm no longer a survivor. I have a new identity now. I'm healed. Can you get there? Yes. Does it take time? Yes. Does it take energy and effort and willingness? Yes. And NASCA is so good of helping with so many people in so many different ways. They need to have NASCA involved with them to get to the finish line of healing. And how's that?
Thank you. Thank you. And just to remind everybody, NASCA stands for National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. And the radio show that you're listening to is called SCAN. And that stands for Stop Child Abuse Now. This is radio show 2882. And I'm going to sign off and say good night, everybody. And thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.